This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Yes, it is. Hello and welcome to Washington Watch. It's great to be back behind the microphone. I almost forgot what it felt like. And by the way, my thanks to Ken Kulkowski for helping me out while we're here in Cleveland. And last week, while I took a little family vacation up to Alaska, I had a great time. Might talk about that some this week. By the way, speaking of Cleveland, it has been a busy week here in Cleveland. It's only, you see, today, Wednesday? Yes. I got here on Sunday after taking a red eye in, and we have been working on the party platform. We're going to talk more about that on the program today. I know Ken's been keeping you up on it, but we've been working into the night each night. And it will be formally adopted next week at the convention. But there are some LGBT activists who are trying to derail the platform. And they're using, surprise, surprise, deceptive tactics to accomplish it. David Barton of Texas, who was on the platform committee with me, will join me in just a moment to talk about those deceptive tactics. Also, one of the narratives that we repeatedly hear is that, look, only people over 50 believe in traditional values. And if the Republicans are going to keep up with the times, they've got to jettison these antiquated views on marriage and human sexuality and family. Well, you know, you notice they never make those claims about economic issues, even though there is more evidence to suggest that fiscal conservatism is at risk, ask Bernie Sanders. But let me tell you, there were a number of young delegates that were a part of the platform committee, 112 delegates from across the country, all 50 states and territories. These young people are solidly conservative. I'm telling you, they were impressive. And one of those delegates from the state of Virginia is going to join me a little bit later, Tommy Valentine. Also, I'm going to ask Ken Kulkowski to drop in as we continue our discussion on what is happening here in Cleveland a little bit later. The website is TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest and our topics. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right, as many of you know, so I've just been talking about, we've been here in Cleveland helping to shape the party's platform. I am a delegate from my home state of Louisiana, elected to the platform, and it's been a real privilege to serve in that capacity, representing the Republicans of my home state. And I've been involved in the platforms going back to 2004 in the Bush administration, the Bush campaign, the McCain campaign, the Romney campaign. I'll have to say, not only did we come out with a very good document in this platform committee, but the campaign was very respectful. I'm talking about the Trump campaign, very respectful of the elected delegates, allowing them to do their work. And no strong arm tactics like I've seen in previous years. And I mean, it was refreshing. Now, also, what's very interesting about this is that the Republicans allow diverse opinions, and they allow them to be expressed and to allow amendments. And there were a couple of individuals there who were funded by a prominent Republican who funds LGBT efforts to try to move the party away from its traditional values. And he spent about reportedly somewhere between $2 and $6 million to influence the platform. I think he should probably used his money for something else because he didn't get much for it. His delegates repeatedly introducing these amendments to put LGB stuff into the platform and repeatedly, time after time, overwhelmingly rejected. But they engaged in some deceptive tactics that were designed to derail the platform going into the convention next week. Joining me now to talk about that is one of the delegates who serves on the platform committee with me. He's well known to our radio audience, David Barton of Wall Builders from the Lone Star State. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be with you again, bro.
As we were departing yesterday evening when things were wrapping up, there was all of a sudden buzz about a minority report, which was designed to say, all right, we don't agree with the major report and a number of signatures. In fact, CNN reported 37 people signed on to a minority report. Now, come to find out, they claimed that you were a part of that. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, you know, I hate to admit it, but they were exactly right. I was a part of that. And CNN told me that what I signed on to was an LGBT measure to bring LGBT measures up on the floor at the convention. And I think it was very deliberate that CNN did not put any names out there when they had the names, because had they put my name out or so many others, people would say, no, this is a false report. You don't get the sensationalism. What had happened was, as we started the convention, our platform last time, I was on platform convention last time, as were you, was 62 pages. And it was a very good document, very conservative platform. There was some heavy-handed leverage applied by the nominee at times, but by and large, they left it alone, and it came out as what we would consider maybe one of the most conservative platforms in our lifetime. And so we come in this time, and we're looking at it probably being longer, because last time we weren't dealing with ISIS, we weren't dealing with Obama trade, we weren't dealing with executive orders like we have now, so many things. And so we thought it'd be longer, and we went back in our history, and a delegate from Utah, Boyd Matheson, looked back, and he said, you know, the original 1860 platform in which Abraham Lincoln got elected only had 17 planks. It was 1,200 words long. That's it. And I actually have the original platform. So I got the original 1856 Republican platform, first one ever. It's only 9 planks long. The 1861 to 17 planks. The 1864 platform's only 11 planks. And so Boyd said, what if we kind of simplify the document, just boil it down to our principles? And so he worked with Larry Arn out of Hillsdale, and they got it boiled down to the same 17 principles, trying to keep it at 1,200 words like Lincoln had done. And it had defense in there, and it had life in there, and it had family in there, and it had limited government and restrained judiciary and all the things we believe. And so we'd worked on that, and there were a number of us that wanted to see something much shorter. And so our effort was to see if we could get delegates that would be open to using that as maybe a preamble to the platform. We adopt the platform. It'll probably be 70 pages this time, but we adopt this preamble where that we can give it out in one page to our neighbors and say, you know what, here's what we believe. Here's what we think is important for America. Here's the Declaration, the Constitution, all the good stuff. And so as this is coming to a close, they approached us and said, hey, we can get this as a preamble to the platform. We just need to sign this resolution. And so they gave us papers, and a bunch of us signed it, and they were going around the room saying, who signed it? You need to sign this. Well, at the end, when it came time to introduce this resolution, they suddenly say, oh, by the way, this is a minority report. And a minority report means you have to have 28 delegates, and what you're doing is telling the convention we want an open floor debate because we disagree with the platform that we have here. Well, we didn't disagree with it. We just want to include something simpler. And then these guys go to CNN and say, oh, look, we've got LGBT issues on the floor now. We're going to be able to. And so CNN runs with the story about how that one-third, 37 of the delegates support this LGBT measure for a fight on the floor of the issues. Well, Boyd and I put out an email this morning and said, we've all been deceived. You know what this is about. We wanted a preamble, and you all saw it, and we passed it around. Lots of people liked it. And so we're taking our name off this minority report, and we urge you to, too. And as of the time we're on right now, 26 people have pulled their name off there, so there is no minority report. There's nobody wanting to be part of this LGBT thing except just a handful of folks. But they wanted news coverage. They wanted media, and they got it out there. It's very disingenuous. They lied to us about what it was all about. We thought they were doing what they thought they said they were. That was getting this as a preamble to the platform. And as it turns out, they were making news to divide a very unified Republican convention that we had.
I mean, that is extremely deceptive. I mean, I know it's one thing to work through the legislative process and be aggressive, and we had that. I mean, no one kept them from repeatedly introducing amendments on the floor of the full committee to try to interject these issues or remove definitions of marriage and all of this. And they were resoundingly defeated by the delegates over and over and over. And so then to go around and get people to sign something in such a deceptive manner, I mean, to me, that just, it should show the American public what is really driving this agenda and how these folks operate.
Tony, you've been in politics for a while. You held elective office. You're now leading a great national organization that deals with traditional family values. Have you ever been called narrow-minded or single-issued? Sure, all of us have. We all been called that. Well, I'll tell you, we had 3 hours on Sunday. We had 12 hours on Monday, and we had 10 hours on Tuesday. So as I counted, that's 25 hours. Out of 25 hours, about 15 minutes encompassed LGBT issues. And it is significant that that is the only single issue that drives them. They turn the entire platform meeting into LGBT issues. They get CNN to run the story, and they call us narrow-minded and single-issued. My gosh, the only thing that was important to them in this thing was homosexual sex. And you're calling Christians narrow-minded?
It was the most
amazing thing I've seen to take 25 hours and take 15 minutes out of it, where, as you said, they were voted down. They got their debate. They had their time. They were allowed to make all their motions, allowed to speak as much as they wanted to on the issue, or as much as the rules allowed, 2 minutes per delegate. And we had the votes, and they went down in a very Republican fashion. I don't mean Republicans big R, I mean small R. We had votes on this, the majority won, and then they turned this into a national fiasco about one issue.
And what's disturbing about this, and what should send a message to Republican officials and others who keep saying, well, we got to have this big tent, we got to do all this, is that they're willing, by these actions, to derail the entire convention over something they know that's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. And it took the focus off the things that were important. I particularly was in the subcommittee on the Constitution. And, man, the declaration we have of the Constitution, the principles of the Declaration, the language of the Constitution, what we did with First Amendment and Second Amendment and Fifth Amendment and Ninth Amendment and Tenth Amendment, we got a powerful platform. And you're in the family section, and what you guys did with so many. I've heard it called that this is the most conservative platform in modern history. And I believe that. I think that's probably true. All of that went under the bus. None of that's in the discussion. None of that's being talked about. It's all about one issue. And what we said about military, what we said about ISIS, what we said about getting regulatory agencies under control, don't let them make law, let it be the House and the Senate, what we said about executive orders, what we said about the energy grid, what we said about all of the above kind of energy, none of that. And it was all really good stuff that we got in there, and they've hijacked it. And it literally is through deceptive tactics, they've hijacked the entire debate. Now, the good news is that there's a number of news guys that came out with the rest of the story and said, CNN, one of the guys was actually following me for the entire 2 days. His media assignment was to tell Barton and write stories about Barton, and he did, and he outed it and said, no, I was there for 2 days. That is not what happened. And so we're now getting media on the other side. But look at the attempt, as you said, very deceptive to try to hijack the entire debate and make it focused on an issue that was worth 15 minutes of debate out of 25 hours.
Well, hopefully the rest of the country will see that as well and understand what's driving this agenda. David Barton, thanks so much for joining us, and good work on the platform.
You too, sir. You did a great job. God bless you.
All right, David Barton with Wall Builders, a delegate from the state of Texas who is serving on the platform committee. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined with another member of the platform committee. Often we're told that only those over 50 care about value issues. Not so. We're going to talk with one of them when we return.
If you take a quick look at the state of America, what do you think we need most to renew our country? You may be thinking that we need better leadership within our government, more jobs, and active economic development, and you would be right. All of those things are important, and God in His power can accomplish all of them. But the most important thing we can do to align ourselves with God's will is to pray. Therefore, Family Research Council is encouraging Christians across America to participate in Call to Fall. We are asking pastors and churches to consider setting aside time during worship on Sunday, July 3rd, to call their people to get on their knees before the Lord in prayer and ask Him to renew and restore our land. If you want to learn more about this effort on July 3rd, visit calltofall.com. Join us for this inspiring time across our nation as we all seek God in our prayers and ask Him for the renewal of our country. That's call2fall.com.
More than a million believers have signed the pledge to boycott Target, and we urge you to join them. The American Family Association opposes the policy of Target allowing transgenders into the bathroom of their choice. Here's AFA President Tim Wildman.
There's a reason why we've had male and female separation in restrooms and fitting rooms for all of mankind's history.
A policy which allows men into women's restrooms and fitting rooms is not right, nor is it safe.
I think the human resources departments of these major corporations are the tail wagging the dog. Because I just can't see corporate executives at Target or anywhere else sitting around a table going, you know, guys, I think we need to open up our women's restrooms for men.
Visit AFA.net to learn more and sign the pledge to boycott Target. Don't spend your money at Target until they stop putting our family members at risk with this dangerous, politically correct policy. That's AFA.net.
What's at stake in this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. I'm glad to be back. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And Ken Kulkowski is going to be joining me a little bit later. In fact, you're going to be hearing from him throughout the week. There, I got it out. And into next week, he's up here with us in Cleveland. He's filling in for me. Grateful for that. Because of various responsibilities I have with Council for National Policy and the convention. So we're going to be bringing you information right from the front row of what's unfolding here in Cleveland. We've been talking about the GOP platform committee that met earlier this week, wrapped up last night, at least the initial phase. They'll come back together next Monday, finalize their work, and send it on to the full convention. Now, one of the many delegates that were was here is one from Virginia. In fact, he was the youngest at this year's meeting, Tommy Valentine. Tommy was able to help strengthen the party's platform on life, on natural marriage. And I'll tell you, this was one of the things that encouraged me, and that was the number of young delegates. You know, we keep hearing this thing about, oh, millennials have walked away from the issues of marriage and they don't care about traditional values. Not so. Not so whatsoever. Joining now to discuss this issue, as I mentioned, the youngest delegate on this year's platform committee, Tommy Valentine. Tommy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on. And again, great work the last couple of days on the platform. And I wanted to have you on, Tommy, in particular, because not only were you very articulate and vocal and engaged in the process, but you were the youngest delegate. Tell our listeners how old you are.
22 years old.
All right, 22. What got you involved in this type of stuff to where you would want to be a delegate to the Republican National convention and be a delegate on the platform committee?
Well, I'm a grassroots activist, and I have been pretty much my whole life. My mom has been heavily involved in the Right to Life movement and in Republican politics. And I really started taking on this sort of work on my own when I was 14 during the 2008 presidential election. And that year was the first time I worked the polls on election day. And then during high school, I ran a website about our local congressman, who was, you know, about as far left as it gets, and was just a guy who constantly insulted those who disagree with him. He said some really inflammatory things. And, you know, the media wasn't reporting on what he was doing because they agreed with it. So I started this website about the congressman, exposing his record and what he was saying. And that website was very successful. And just over the years, I've been involved in various campaigns. And at my college campus, I'm the president of our Young Americans for Freedom chapter, where we've registered hundreds of young conservative students to vote in the last three elections. So I have a passion for it, and I care about our causes, and I ran at my local level as a delegate from my congressional district. I came in first out of 16 candidates, and then I ran to represent Virginia on the platform committee, and won that easily. So it was an honor to represent Virginia and to be a voice for the younger generation.
Well, Tommy, let's talk about some of the issues that you addressed from the floor of the full committee. You talked about the life issue. You talked about the marriage issue. Are those issues that you think are of concern to your generation?
Yes, absolutely. And one thing that I spoke about on the floor of the platform committee was the fact that my generation is the most pro-life generation since before Roe versus Wade, at least. You know, even young people who might disagree with us and support same-sex marriage, they are avidly pro-life. And, you know, we're always hearing about how the Republican Party needs to attract more young people. You know, we need to change our positions on this and that. Well, how about we look at the positions we already have? We are the pro-life party, and young people are pro-life. We've grown up seeing sonograms. We've grown up meeting our brothers and sisters, you know, in a hospital 4 months before they're born because we see them on a sonogram, on an ultrasound. So this is one of the ways that we can attract young people, by pointing out how we are the pro-life party, and the Democratic Party is very extreme on abortion. You know, in their platform, they're trying to call for taxpayer funding of abortion. They're getting more radical. And so this is an area where the Republican Party needs to call out the Democrats. And this is how we can attract young people, because they already agree with us. And it's time we stop, as Republicans, stop running away from the positions we have and started embracing them, because we don't need to change the positions to attract young people.
Tommy, in the end, when the platform was adopted, what were your thoughts about the final platform?
I thought it was excellent. As David said, I think it's the most conservative platform that we've seen in decades, at least. You know, I think what your listeners need to know is that the media is pushing a narrative that the Republican Party is divided about same-sex marriage. There's a rift within the party. That's simply not true. Within the subcommittees, within the full committee, everybody was united that we need to protect natural marriage, that we need to protect the right to life. And it was a small, vocal minority who were out there really just as a media stunt to try to gain attention for themselves and their liberal positions. And, of course, that's who all the reporters went to, is the liberal delegates, instead of the vast majority of conservative delegates who believe in natural marriage and the right to life. So I would tell your listeners, the media is, as usual, telling lies about what's really happening. The Republican Party is united. We stand for the right to life. We stand for natural marriage. We stand for religious liberty. And we stand for all the other conservative positions that you'll find in the platform. And I think people will be very, very happy with the results.
Well, and it is strongly articulated in that platform for the 2016 cycle, and in large part because of the efforts that you put forth, Tommy. Tommy, I have to tell you, you are one of the reasons that I have great confidence in the future of this country because of young people like you. So, Tommy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tony.
All right, Tommy Valentine, a delegate from the state of Virginia who was also on the platform committee. I'm telling you, this is why I tell you the book, No Fear. I write the stories of these young people who are standing up unapologetically for their faith. They're out there. They're everywhere. All right, take heart. Do not believe the media narrative. All right, don't believe it. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about the GOP platform week here in Cleveland, Ohio. And Ken Klukowski joins me when we come back. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
One of the questions I get all the time is, when should I start receiving Social Security? It's a good question, and it's one that's been wrestled with for years. Of course, there's a lot of viewpoints out there, and my viewpoint is a little bit different than most. The general viewpoint is, look, start collecting Social Security as early as you possibly can. The sooner you start, the more you're going to end up with in the long run. That's an okay viewpoint, I guess. If you are thinking about, well, I'm 62 now, I'm going to start accumulating some wealth. Too late. It's not the time to be thinking about that, in my opinion. From a personal perspective, I'm not going to start collecting Social Security, Lord willing, until I'm 70. And I'm going to receive 31% more money every month by waiting till I'm age 70. See, here's the thing. You need to change your focus. Forget about how much you're going to accumulate or how much you're going to get out of the government if you live a long time. And start thinking about the only thing that matters, and the only thing, trust me on this, that's going to matter to you, is, do I have enough income to pay my monthly expenses? It's all that should matter. The only thing that should matter is receiving, collecting as much fixed income as you possibly can. I think it pays to wait, as long as you possibly can. Take that Social Security at a later date. Oh, I know overall you're not going to receive as much, but I guarantee you, as your monthly expenses go up, you'll appreciate the fact that you have more income every month coming in because you waited. Ultimately, that's all you're going to care about.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at AFAFoundation.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're not getting my daily update by email, sign up for that, because especially as we're up here in Cleveland, where things are unfolding on a fairly rapid pace, you can keep up to date with what's going on. Go to TonyPerkins.com, sign up for those alerts and an update as we continue the work on the platform and then convention next week. And by the way, I would be happy to go to the Democratic convention to be a part of their platform too, if they allow dissenting views. And that's, you know, you don't see the media talking about that. The fact that the Republicans open the door, they allow anybody to come in who can be elected and bring their viewpoints. They don't shut them up. They don't shut them down. They let them work within the framework. And this is how they repay that generosity. They try to use deception to undermine the process. But I get sidetracked here. All right. As I mentioned earlier, Ken Klukowski been on this week, on some last week, filling in for me, and will be with us the remainder of this week and into next week. And so he joins me now as we kind of dissect even further what took place the last 2 days on the platform committee here in Cleveland. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's ironic when the music was coming back from commercial break, I had to stop myself from saying, "And we're back." I've appreciated the opportunity to be able to guest host your show.
Well, you've been doing a great job. I've been getting great feedback and reports. It is addictive. It is addictive. You get that music and you start you start wanting to respond. It's kind of like it's like Pavlov's dog, you know. I saw you back there salivating. All right. You were there as well. You stepped out. We went late, but you stepped out to come do radio. But you watched this process as it went through. Your thoughts on? Well, I guess you gave your thoughts last night, but let me refine that question. I want to talk about what I was talking with David Barton about earlier, about the deception used to try to derail the platform by saying they were circulating a resolution to call for a preamble when in fact it was a minority report to try to open up this whole debate on the convention floor.
Yes, and there were, as I've mentioned on the show, and I've mentioned on other shows over the past few days, and I have a news report up on Breitbart News talking about it, that there was a small number of delegates backed by billionaire hedge fund manager Paul Singer in New York, seeking to force to revolutionize the Republican Party to become one that is no longer welcoming and celebrating people of faith, and they were pushing a strident LGBT agenda to remove language regarding marriage, regarding respect for the First Amendment right to be able to live your life mm-hmm. according to your faith, and to be able to express your beliefs peaceably without fear of punishment, to remove that language and insert a bunch of LGBT language. And as you said earlier, all of those things were given a full and fair hearing. They were brought up for a vote, and by an overwhelming majority, the delegates there representing all of these different states, all the different parts of the country, people from all different walks of life, having respectfully listened and debated, voted those measures down and kept the Republican Party platform on solid footing in terms of welcoming and celebrating tens of millions of peaceful, honorable Americans of faith who hold to a millennia-old understanding of issues like marriage and family and the reason that the First Amendment of the Constitution is to protect freedom of conscience and speech.
The issue of religious freedom, one that you work on quite a bit, that was a prominent issue in the platform.
Huge.
The much bigger than it was 4 years ago. Of course, obviously, the problem has become more prominent.
Yes.
But the platform, I think, does a really good job addressing both the fundamental freedom, its importance, but also the threat.
Yeah, I work each day on religious liberty as senior counsel with First Liberty Institute and with our mutual friend Kelly Shackelford. And it is, you're exactly right. Now, we were involved in over 500 religious liberty matters last year. And thank God we have a success rate of over 90% on those issues. The things that we're having to defend right now in court are things that were inconceivable just 5 years ago. And so, yes, it is in response to unprecedented threats to America's founding freedom to be able, religious liberty, both freedom of speech and the free exercise of your religion, to be able to live your life and run your business consistent with your faith. It's because of these unprecedented attacks that, yes, the delegates, you among them, obviously took this very seriously and wanted to enshrine broad, robust language as to exactly where the Republican Party stands on the side of religious freedom.
You know what that music means, don't you?
I do indeed.
Okay. All right. Well, just sit tight because I want to talk with you some more about this. I want to talk a little bit more about this deception because there was an amendment that I added in the subcommittee dealing with parental rights that the left has taken and run with and twisted into something that is not. It's just, again, a reflection of the lack of honesty that those that have really kind of infiltrated the Republican Party have. So we're going to talk about that, Ken. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. Here from Cleveland, you're listening to Washington Watch. We're in the rock and roll capital of the world, I guess. There'll be a lot of rocking and rolling going on next week anyway. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C., and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
It's 2 a.m., and Tommy's raspy cough has become a horrible-sounding bark. You can go rushing into the night with your little one for an ER visit, or you can teleconference with a board-certified pediatrician to evaluate Tommy, give you advice, and write a prescription if necessary. MD Live is a network of board-certified physicians available anytime and anywhere. Information about MD Live is available at hcbenefits.com. hcbenefits.com.
So you're a seasoned pastor, you have a Master's of Divinity degree, but you've always wanted to get your doctorate. Now is the time for you to apply to the Doctorate of Ministries program at Wesley Biblical Seminary. Our Doctorate of Ministries in Transformational Leadership will give you the laser-like focus for pastoral ministry that you need. Bible, theology, and practical ministry application. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Apply today. Preach the word. Reach the world. WBS.edu.
As Christians, we occasionally need to retreat from the culture war for a time of renewal. The American Family Association invites you to retreat with us to the mountains of North Carolina, October 3rd through 6th, for the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove. Speakers at this year's event will include AFA President Tim Wildman, Governmental Affairs Director Sandy Rios, Messianic Jewish Apologist Dr. Michael Brown, Marquis Laughlin, founder of Acts of the Word Ministries, and more. As in years past, we'll gather at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Capacity is limited to 400 participants, so make your plans to attend soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 2, followed by option 1. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th, in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. We are broadcasting live from Cleveland, Ohio, where the Republican convention will begin next week. This week was the Republican platform and rules. A lot going on here in Cleveland as the Republicans gather, as they do every 4 years, to select a nominee, set the rules for their party, and adopt a platform. And we've been working on that platform. I was elected as a delegate from my home state of Louisiana, and was elected to be on the platform committee. So I've been doing that work. And one of the amendments, and Ken Kukowski joins me, and I'm going to ask him about this, because I added this amendment in the subcommittee that I served on families and education and health care. This is the amendment. I'm going to read it exactly as it appears. And you're going to get something nobody else gets, because this document has not yet been released. But I wrote this so I can release it to you. Quote, we support the right of parents to determine the proper medical treatment and therapy for their minor children. We support the right of parents to consent to medical treatment for their minor children and urge enactment of legislation that would require parental consent to transport their daughters across state lines for abortions. End quote. Ken, I'm going to ask you, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it's that language seems just to be a general reference that if you're a parent and you have children who legally, because they're not of the age of legal consent, they can't enter into a contract for medical services. Now, the law does allow, in the case of emergencies, right, for medical personnel to be able to act. But short of that, before a medical professional, my wife is a practicing physician. I mean, before a medical professional can lay hands on you, they need your consent. If you're a child, you can't give that consent. So that is properly reserved for parents. Now, obviously, a big issue where that comes up right here is when it comes to abortion, the idea, right, of a child who is nonetheless old enough to become pregnant, but a teenager, not an adult, getting pregnant, whether they can undergo an invasive surgical procedure that could have severe health consequences and possibly render that young woman unable to have children for the rest of her life.
Not to mention the emotional.
Absolutely. Effects. That's saying that parents need to be involved when we're talking about children going under the knife.
And many states have either parental notification or parental consent laws when it comes to abortion, so that a child cannot be subjected to an abortion without the parents being notified in some cases or receiving the consent. Of course, then we have what this calls for is prohibiting. What's been occurring is when a state has notification laws, they take the child, someone will take the minor across state lines to a state that does not have such provisions. And this is simply calling for legislation that would require that same consent.
Yeah, I think that wording is plain on its face. I think it's something the American people support. You know, when you go from one state to another, you are leaving a sovereign state going to another state with all different laws. You know, children do not have, strangers don't have the right to take children into a different legal regime. This is about saying parents need to be involved in their children's lives and the law should respect that.
But that is not how that paragraph has been talked about on social media. And this goes back to my earlier conversation with David Barton about the LGBT community and their self-absorption and how everything is about them. In that paragraph, what they have said, and you can see this anywhere. Google it. If you're on social media, you see it. This is solely about reparative therapy for homosexuals.
You know, a wise boss that I once had told me that when you give a man a hammer, all he sees in life are nails. And for anyone to read it that way, I think if LGBT activists are saying that, then that shows that you can have plain language that would apply to dozens of different issues. And for some reason, they think that that's some sort of a dog whistle or code language that you are speaking to their issue and only their issue. That was a recurring theme throughout the debates. I mean, when there was a provision condemning Islamic terrorism, that we oppose Islamic terrorism, I would have thought that was language that would unify everyone. Here, this is something we can unanimously agree upon. We oppose Islamic terrorism. And then you had a delegate, I believe from the state of New York, who insisted that we put in there, and especially against LGBT individuals.
That, quite frankly, was a turning point. And, you know, having been in the legislature and serving in a legislative body, it's like an organism. Right. It's like it begins to take on a personality, and over time it moves, and it's interesting. It's the dynamics of an organization. That was a turning point because it was very clear at that point when we were talking about the victims of Islamic terrorism, and that language was offered on the floor, especially LGBT persons or whatever the wording was. No one else. Only LGBT. And people, wait a minute, there are Yazidis, and this was in reference primarily to terrorism that's happening on foreign soil.
Right.
I mean, there are Christians, there are Muslims, there are Yazidis,
Many. Tell the Christians who got beheaded in those hideous videos that we've seen pictures of that they were not special targets of terrorism. Go to Israel. And tell people tell Israelis that Jews are not the special targets of Islamic terrorism. I mean, it's that there's Islamic terrorists kill a whole bunch of different types of people, and they don't seem to be, and it's not especially anyone. I mean, these people are deadly threats, and yet the whole idea that you have to make everything about identity politics.
Yeah.
And one group of victims. Yeah, it was disappointing. Yeah, the language that you have there is general language regarding parental rights in healthcare. I think any reasonable person would read it that way. Anyone who does not read it that way is just not being reasonable.
Well, and there you have it. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, @TPerkins. By the way, I would encourage you, if you're not following me on Twitter, unless you're one of those haters, don't bother because I will delete you. But if you want to find out what's happening and you want to track it, we'll be keeping you posted on social media, on Twitter. Ken, we've been talking about the conservative aspect of this platform, and there's a number of delegates that have been doing this for a long time. I'm not sure why. I mean, it's an important process, and I guess that's what I want to talk about. But there's people that have been doing this for a long time, and they have said this is the most conservative platform they've ever seen. Now, clearly the most conservative I've seen, and I've not been a long time a participant in this process. I go back to 2004, the first time I was involved in the platform, not as a delegate, but on the outside working on it. What is the application of the platform, and why is that important, or what importance does it have?
The importance is this is the party speaking to all of America about this is what we're about, and if you entrust us as a party with the levers of government, this is our vision for the direction that we would take the country. Some of it gets into a little bit of granular detail. Other parts are very broad concepts and principles. But if you put it all together and look at it from 35,000 feet, that people get a mosaic. They get a picture about that. This is our vision for America. And yes, from what I've heard, I spoke with Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach. I believe this is his
solid
third or fourth.
Yeah, we worked together last time.
Third or fourth platform committee that he's worked on, where he made the comment this is the most conservative one that he's ever worked on. Of course, David Barton earlier in the show said most conservative in modern history. I think it draws an incredibly stark contrast with what you're going to get from Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party in terms of very different visions of what America is all about, what freedom is all about, what the Constitution is all about, and what we as a people, as a self-governing people, the direction that we should go in, the destiny that under God we should chart for ourselves. And I think it's important, because I think the American people need to say, you know, need to see this is what we're about. This is what the competition is about. And you, Mr. or Mrs. Average American, you're a voter. You get to decide. You have a God-given right and a God-given obligation, because he has empowered you, to lend your vote and your voice as to which of these two visions you want to see for yourself and your family.
Yeah, I think it's a clear contrast when you look at the two parties and what they're putting forward. And certainly the president, Congress are not bound by the platform, nor the Constitution in some cases, if you ask the current president. But
that's one of the differences between the two parties.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that was articulated.
Yes.
Over and over.
Explicitly in writing.
In fact, I added language regarding what this president has done in terms of sowing seeds of distrust and discord between the law enforcement community and the communities they represent.
It's a war on cops.
Yeah.
And it's and I put national organization of police. Their spokesman said that, you know, Barack Obama is the Neville Chamberlain in the war on cops, and that his policies, I mean, this isn't me speaking, this is, you know, national police organizations laid it at his feet and held him accountable.
Oh, there's no question.
Said that your rhetoric, the way you have framed this discussion, has created the environment in which terrible things of this nature are more likely to happen, that the president needs to be an outspoken defender of the police, not seeking to blame them.
Well, and I put that language in the platform, but also it begins with the president of the United States not only supporting law enforcement with his words, but operating within the rule of law by his actions.
Yes.
And this president has undermined the law enforcement community at every level because of his lawlessness, his refusal to abide by the law and fully enforce the law when that, in fact, was his responsibility.
Yeah, and in fact, it's what his oath of office requires, and the Constitution says explicitly that the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. And yet what we've seen with this president, when he wants a particular outcome, immigration being a perfect example, more than 20 times told the American people on national television, I do not have the legal authority to do this without Congress. Only Congress can do it. I'm trying to persuade him to do it. But if they don't, it would be illegal for me to do it. I'm not a king, he said. I'm not an emperor. He even used that language. After 2 years of Congress saying, thank you, Mr. President, we've heard your thoughts. We categorically reject them. We will not do it. Then he said, you know what? I've discovered I do have this power. And he did it through executive order. And now, thank God, in the lower courts, they struck it down as illegal. But at the U.S. Supreme Court, the only reason that President Barack Obama's illegal executive amnesty is struck down is because the Supreme Court tied. There were four votes, one shy of a majority on the Supreme Court, to rubber stamp and say that a president does in fact have the power to do this. And that's part of the stakes in November.
Absolutely.
Hillary Clinton fills the seat left open by Justice Antonin Scalia, and you would have a majority on the Supreme Court that would say that the president of the United States can change the law with a stroke of a pen.
And that doesn't last just 4 years. That has, I mean, those guys are there for life, and some of them are living a long time.
And once it becomes the new baseline, it would be like Rome went from being a republic to an empire. I mean, if you permanently expand the powers of the presidency like that, you might not be able to ever put that toothpaste back in that tube.
Yeah, it's is a lot at stake in this election. Ken Kulkowski, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for filling in for me here in Cleveland as I'm hopping
Thanks for
around.
The opportunity. It's been a great pleasure.
All right.
At least for me. Hopefully for your listeners
as
well.
Oh, they love you. They love you. Ken Kulkowski, who's been filling in, you'll hear more from him tomorrow and the remainder of the week. I just want to encourage you folks to be prayerful of where our country is, especially going into to next week. And I would encourage you to pray for the Republican Party and those involved in it, the Democratic Party. Pray for the leadership of our nation. Our nation is in serious trouble. Now, there's always challenges. Life brings challenges. But when you look at where America is and what's happening on our own streets and how we see this, I almost describe it as implosion of our culture, where police officers are being killed on our streets, terrorist attacks in our own neighborhoods. This is happening in America. This is not a TV show. It's not a movie. We're not going to get up and it's going to go away. We've got to take responsibility for this. And it begins as Christians, I believe, first in prayer, interceding for this nation. But it also requires that we get up off our knees and we take action. And that's why I'm here in Cleveland. This is not my idea of having a good time. But I think it's critical for the future of our nation that we be informed, engaged, and that we would be about bringing others into the process. I would encourage you to challenge your neighbors, your family, your church members to be involved, be registered, be informed, and be voting. And as we go into next week, be praying for the Republican convention and this platform. This platform, by the way, as we were talking earlier, how it can be used. A lot of school board members, city council members can use this platform to advance these conservative ideas at the local level. We did the hard work. We got to preserve it, get it across the line. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. It's just great to be back behind the microphone. I had a great time. We're going to be talking. If I get back on tomorrow, we've got a lot going on. Ken may be back in. I want to talk with you before the week's over about potential VP picks. I've got my thoughts on that, so we might have a chance to talk about that. Until next time, though, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.